clock comes fast some days. I mean, I've only been sitting in here for an hour. I don't know what it means, but I just noticed that Parker's got new headphones. And they're noise-canceling headphones.
I am the smartest guy in this room. It's not even close either. Yeah, that's a fact.
Just make sure that, you know, that the noise canceling is appropriately.
Every time you talk, they just beep. Yeah. In my ear. Beep, beep.
You just like being at home. It's Baseball Central. An off day for the Toronto Blue Jays today, but no off day for us.
My Jays.
They'll take on my Rays tomorrow in the first of three games against Tyler Glasnow.
Ooh, happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Go get him. Well, we're going to find out if they can hit a heater.
Yeah. The Jays 6-3 winners over the Boston Red Sox last night. And I will admit, I did not. I turned it off after it was 6-3. I said on Twitter, this puppy's over. I knew it was over. I went to bed and read because I just. Hey, the game was dragging and dragging and dragging and dragging. And you get a sense. I kind of figured the Jays had that sucker.
Oh, Papa Blair could feel it, huh?
I could feel it.
In his bones. Well,
I could feel it. I could feel it. I had that. I was just tired.
It's pretty late. 7:40 starts. Tough on those senior citizens.
Well, you know. It's
pretty tough.
7:40 starts, and then Rafael Dolis.
Oh, you kidding me?
Well, I'm fine with that.
As long as it works.
I am fine with that. I'm fine with that. The only pitcher I have covered whose slowness used to drive me around the bend was Jason Fraser, who was the slowest person to ever play the game. And that was simply because I was a writer and I was on deadline. Yeah, now that I don't have a deadline,
you don't care.
I don't give a crap. I truly don't. Rafael Dolis can pick his nose 100 times.
He was grunting a lot last night. Yeah, you know, I think the splitter's not working. He's trying to add a little bit extra to the sinker a little bit extra to the slider.
I like watching him pitch. I like everything about Rafael Dolis.
I think he tries to bore the hitter.
I think he does.
I think that's what he tries.
I think there's a little bit of craftiness in there. There's a little bit of arrogance too, I think. I just like the way he is on the mound. It's like, I got the ball. I'll throw it when I want.
Yeah, you'll start like when it. I start.
Exactly. I got the ball. I'll hold this damn thing for 5 minutes if you want.
People watching are like, huh.
And it was obviously an effective game for the Blue Jays bullpen. Tommy Malone, who...
Your favorite pitcher. You've never texted me as much as Malone is on the mound. Well, man, it's so much fun to watch.
Well, you don't think that's fun to watch?
Not really.
Oh.
80 poo with a...
80 poo? When has it gone up? It's like 70 poo.
I mean, do you remember a guy named John Halama?
Yes, I do.
I think he pitched for the Giants.
I remember
John Halama. I played winter ball with him.
Of course.
He's exactly like Malone. I can remember players from Dominican would face John Halama, and they were so mad because, you know, in Dominican, it is 98 and hard slider and I change up. What? I'm going to throw it hard, that kind of. Then you face John Halama, and it's like he couldn't break an egg. And those, they were so mad. They were ripping their batting gloves off, throwing in the stands and giving their bats away.
Well, let me ask you this. Okay. Because look, last night it was one of those Fenway Park games. It was kind of messy. Nobody was much interested in playing defense. I mean, I'm tired of talking about it with the Blue Jays. It is what it is, folks. And we're just going to have to suck it up. We can come on every day and every night and say third base, the defense has to be better. Shortstop has to be better, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'll just say this before I move on to the Tommy Malone love fest. I will take that offensive / defensive game from Cavan. That's kind of what Cavan is right now. If he can walk twice as often as he makes an error in a game, that's okay. Stick him down in like the eighth or ninth spot. And just, again, say, Cavan, do whatever floats your boat. You want to go to the plate without a bat and just walk your way on. I'm cool with that. Just kind of don't gum up the works. So I think we can do that with him. But, you know, again, folks, we know what this infield defense is all about. Maybe it's going to get better as the season goes on. Maybe it won't, but it is, frankly, what it is. Now, back to Tommy Malone.
Yeah.
How does that slop work? How do guys not go up there? And it's going to happen. But yeah. How do guys not go up there, a team like the Red Sox, and beat the living hell out of him?
I think because he's left-handed, that's a big deal. If he was right-handed throwing 82 miles an hour with a slow breaking ball and a changeup that doesn't get there, it's not the same. You face a ton of right-handers. But when you face a lefty that throws a fastball at 82 miles an hour, 83 miles an hour, just so he can throw a slower times two changeup, it's very. You see Bogart swing at the changeup down and away, and he's just like.
Well, my favorite reaction was that was Alex Verdugo. Like, yeah, where did that come from?
Going to a knee, and it's very frustrating because you don't see it a ton, and you got a guy out there that understands who he is and understands. You know, don't try and throw it harder because you can't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Throw it slower. You know, maybe grip the changeup a little bit harder so you could throw it a little bit slower. Yeah, slow down your mechanics a little bit more and throw the curveball a little bit slower. He's very unpredictable, which is a big deal. He'll throw the fastball and seems like the perfect spot, the up and in to a righty just to stand him up so he can sort of the Ryu thing. I'm going to pitch in with my hard, quote unquote, hard stuff to get you out with changeups down and away.
Yeah, but the difference.
And the 0-0 slow breaking ball just puts it in the mind of, okay, it's as slow as it is. But the fastball now, when he does throw it to me, looks 95 because of the big slow. You know, you're gripping it, you're rolling your bat, sawdust is coming out of it because you think your tongue's hanging out, and you're going to hit this ball 3,000 feet, and then it doesn't get there, and you swing through it, and you look like Bogart's a pretty good hitter, and the way he looked against him, it's, you know, you don't overuse him, you don't let the same part of the lineup, you know, the best part of the lineup see him more than one time, he'd be all right.
There's a lot of weird-ass stuff going on in baseball right now. And Tim Kirkjian of ESPN is going to join us later on the show to talk about. We've got to talk about the Oakland Athletics, talk about the Yankees losing to Ian Anderson and the Braves.
The Yankees ever tear it down?
Well, I don't know. There is an indication, and we'll probably get a better idea. I don't know. Did the Yankees play today? But there was very much an indication from Aaron Boone last night that he was going to have a talk with Gleyber Torres for not running out a ball last night. And, you know, a lot of folks covering the Yankees pointed out that he does have options left. And if you want to toss a grenade in there and shake things up, that may be one way to do it. They are not. I was going back and forth between that game and the Jays game. They're not a very good team right now.
No.
They really aren't. Giancarlo Stanton is lost, and he's getting his ass booed. I mean, he is. You know what? It's been a while since we've seen a player get booed out of New York. It used to happen a fair amount. It doesn't happen that much anymore because contracts are so long and there's so much money. But, man, if I'm Giancarlo Stanton, and look, he's getting paid and everything's going to be fine. He's living in Manhattan, for God's sake. Nothing's wrong. Life is good.
Mm-hmm.
But he's getting to that point where you really have to wonder. You have to wonder how long term.
Yeah, the great thing about New York is, though, if he goes 2 for 3 with two homers,
yeah, but not,
people tend to forget.
You know, not really, because they judge everything according to what you did in the postseason.
He had a pretty
decent postseason last year.
Bunch of homers.
He had a pretty good postseason last year, but when they don't win, they tend to find the guys to pick on, and I think he might be that.
But George Springer get off to a slow start when fans get back.
Yeah, but fans
here be hard on George Springer.
No,
you don't think so.
No, it will be much like, well, maybe a little different than Vernon Wells. Fans turned in Vernon Wells pretty quickly here for the contract, and you know, people just didn't realize how often he was hurt and how much he played hurt. Tired of saying it. I tell people that, and you know, people looked at Vernon Wells and they said, well, the guy doesn't look like he really cares, you know, doesn't fire his helmet everywhere. It's the same thing covering Tim Wallach in Montreal. Tim Wallach cared more than anybody I knew. Mm-hmm. He just didn't feel like being a jackass on the field. He wasn't going to throw his helmet around, and Vernon was kind of like that.
Mm.
But Vernon cared, and as I've told people, I have very few baseball players I've covered have played as many games hurt like through hamate stuff and broken bones the way Vernon did. Vernon played through a ton of stuff. Anyhow,
turf toe was a big deal for Vernon.
Turf toe, another thing too. But anyhow, I don't know how the hell did we get in that? Anyhow, we'll talk to Kirkjian about that and maybe get his take on what's going on with the Blue Jays. All right, we got to talk bunting because I know everybody wants to hear talk about bunting.
Hear me talk about it.
And social There's media. No last night. I actually spent some time in social media last
How'd
night.
How'd it go?
The problem when you do that is everybody wants you to sort of converse with them.
You don't want to?
I throw out what I think, and that's kind of it. I don't know if I really want
to. Oh, it's grenade and run. That's what it is.
I don't know if I really want to converse with a bunch of people. I just don't.
So why go on it? Just to stir it up?
No, I don't even stir it up anymore. Eighth inning last night. So Austin Bryce is on for Phillips Valdez. Grichuk singles. Semien singles. So you got runners in first and second. Josh Palacios comes up. And what did I text to you? I did text you a lot last night, but I must have been. I don't know why that is. I usually don't.
Tommy Malone.
Yeah. Okay. So here we go. So he comes up. And I'm saying let him hit because I know it's gonna get you going. And he said, no, there's two righties behind him who are struggling. And then, of course, I said, should have bunted. He flew out the left field. Now, okay, that situation, I would have bunted.
Why?
Let me just say, strategically, I would have bunted. I would have bunted, try to move the guys up, and then hope like hell that one of the next somebody after that will hit a single, or as Kirk did, or at least put the ball in the air. Give me a run. Anyhow. So I came in here and I said should have bunted. You did say, though, and I think we need to mention this. You talked about the pitcher and how he threw and that it may not have been as easy to bunt as a lot of us.
Palacios is left-handed.
Right.
A hitter. Bryce is a sidearm right-handed pitcher. That had the greatest of stuff. You're thinking, first and second, nobody out. Two righties on the on-deck, so, you know, righty. Mm-hmm. Two righties coming up. You know, one is hitting somewhere around his weight. And
right.
The other one doesn't have a batting average.
Yeah.
So what do you do? If you're managing that team and you're at 4-2 and you're facing one of the best teams in baseball offensively who's got some mojo, you're up 4-2. You got a rookie at the plate. You got two guys that are coming up who aren't hitting very well.
But again, all you're asking one of them to do is put the freaking ball in the air. If the bunt works,
it's easier said than done. Like okay. you can say that to your again. I say the sidearm from Bryce because they're going to leave him in against the two righties. They're not taking him out.
Mm-hmm.
So you maybe give the lefty a chance to swing it, and then hopefully. You're saying a little prayer over there that one of the two righties can
the first two pitches he threw would have been hard to bunt too, right?
No.
They would have been easy to bunt?
Yeah, I mean, he's left-handed. That's his game. His game is his feet. Put the ball on the ground. You know, you don't even have to square around to sacrifice bunt.
Okay.
Try and bunt for a hit. Like his first hit in the big leagues was one.
Right.
Runners on base. At the very least, I'm getting them over. But because I'm fast and I'm a halfway decent bunter, I can lay it down the third baseline and try and beat this out. It just sometimes you got to go outside the ordinary a little bit.
Right.
I get it. It's the American League, and that's not what we do. And
so would you have bunted?
Okay. The guy hitting's hitting 250. He's a rookie. You don't really know what he is. Gurriel's hitting 192. Danny Jansen's hitting .59. What's the chances you think right now that Gurriel and Jansen are going to get a hit with a runner on second base? It's not great. Try and make it as simple as you possible can. Have Gurriel coming up with second and third. Maybe he lets the ball travel a little bit better, can drive a ball into
gets
right center.
Fly,
yeah. It's simple now. Now it's almost like he's playing hit and run with the ball.
Right.
Okay. Not hit and running because it's second and third, but he's actually thinking that way that now all I have to do is have a little quieter lower half. Yeah, he's late with his lower half. And that gives him that cast with his hands. That's why you see his back foot always falling across the plate when he swings, because he's not balanced, because it's the way he's starting. He's starting late. He's not seeing the ball well, and then his hands are casting away, and that throws him off balance, and he's missing balls. You can see him. he gets really good pitches to hit, and he fouls them like over the first base dugout. And he's really shaking his head like, I know exactly what I'm doing, but right now I can't fix it for whatever reason. And it's a bad feeling. So if I'm managing that team and I'm up 4-2 in Boston, because I know well as anybody, you sitting around, I know you were watching when Bogarts hit the home run, it was 4-3. You were thinking, man, should have bunted. 5-2 is better than 4-2.
Right.
They score a run, it's 4-3 instead of it could have been 5-3. That's your theory. I'm sticking to it.
Yeah. As I said, I have no problem. I have no problem. Whoa, where did that come from? I have no problem bunting in that.
But they're not going to do
bunting it. Bunting in that situation.
They've had plenty of chances here early in the season to do it with a very struggling team. Why when they get their guys back? They're definitely not going to bunt.
Yeah.
Right now would be the perfect time to put pressure on defenses. We see bad defenses. Yeah. If you're playing against Kevin Biggio right now at third base, and you got first and second in the eighth inning, and you're up 4-2, and you got the same kind of lineup on the other side, you ain't laying a bunt down and letting Kevin run in and chuck that thing somewhere that probably somebody can't catch. Yeah, that's called putting pressure on a defense. Just right now, maybe he'll get better, like you said, a month from now. But right now, that's what you do. You put pressure. You make things happen. You put runners in motion. What do you always tell me about Bo?
Yep.
You make them think about it.
The Blue Jays made a trade today. Sort of. They sent cash considerations to the Arizona Diamondbacks for Jeremy Beasley, who's a 25-year-old right-handed pitcher. Will go to the alternate site and is basically a swing man. I mean, if you see a lot of Jeremy Beasley this year, things aren't going well. That's probably the best way to put it.
Very nice of you.
Well, I mean, it is. He's an arm.
An inning in the big leagues.
Third of an inning in the big leagues. He has some decent strikeout numbers. What did I say in the minors? He pitched at Double A, 23.
Eight and a half strikeouts per nine innings. It's 91 with a slow breaking ball and a slider.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's something that some device has seen about him that somebody in the organization likes. They figure, what the hell, we'll bring another arm in.
Doesn't cost you nothing.
Doesn't cost you anything. No. Thomas Hatch, by the way, has gone in the 60-day IL.
That's a big loss for me.
Well, he was already out for how long had he been out? Thomas Hatch, maybe you get him back at the end of June and he's contributing. But that's kind of the bigger news than who they actually got, I think, is the fact that Thomas Hatch is gone and they
gets back to that spring training. Is spring training really worth it for pitchers?
Yeah. And, we got to talk about Ryan Borucki and Trent Thornton, because I'm still kind of intrigued as to what they are. And we're going to do that after we have Tim Kirkjian on, Bark. I want to talk about, is Borucki working faster than normal? Is that part of the deal?
That's on purpose. Yeah, he has that adrenaline coming from the bullpen to the mound. It's a big deal. It's added a mile or two on the fastball. The slider's a little bit better. The cutter. Being unpredictable a little bit. When you can throw an 0-0 breaking ball, he's a little bit like his buddy Jordan Romano. He's got two different sliders. He's got the get me over 1-0-0, and then he's got one he can expand with two strikes. And then he can go in to a righty with the four seamer or the sinker, and then he can elevate it away and all kinds of things.
I think
lots of confidence.
I think he can be the guy in the bullpen for this team.
What's the guy?
I think he is. We're going to see Jordan Romano and Rafael Dolis get some high leverage situation, but I think at some point you're going to see Borucki in there as well at the end of games, like the ninth inning.
I don't think they're afraid to use him in those spots.
We'll talk about that on the other side of the next segment. Tim Kirkjian will join us. We're going to talk about the Athletics. Remember how they were 0-6? They're 11-6. Talk about the Yankees. We'll take a look around Major League Baseball as well. Tim Kirkjian's next. Always a treat. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Sometimes you watch a team win a game and you kind of let the game end. You look at it and you try to figure out what you've just seen. And then you, step back and try to contemplate what it means exactly. Let's talk about the Oakland Athletics, shall we? A team that Mr. Barker was, you were very high on at the start of the year. I kind of thought that this was the year that the A's, whatever magic was working for them, would wear off. And I felt very good when they started 0-6. Less so now that they're 11-6. They won 11 games in a row. I'm going to watch Moneyball tonight again just to refresh.
Yep.
To refresh my memory about how good the A's can be when they're streaking. Tim Kirkjian of ESPN joins us on Baseball Central. Tim, thank you for doing this. Always good to talk to you. I trust that you're keeping well. There's a lot we want to talk about, obviously, but I do want to talk about the A's first and foremost. Nothing the A's do, I guess, should surprise us anymore. But, you know, when you win a game where a team makes a couple of two-out errors, at some point you begin to wonder if this isn't, you know, if the baseball gods, either the baseball gods really like the A's or the A's have something on the baseball gods that we don't know about.
You know, my dad used to always tell me that when some things start happening to a team, good and bad, you start to wonder, hey, is something going on here? And here are the A's who start out 0-6, and now they've won 11 in a row. They're the only team ever to win 10 games in a row in April after starting out 0-6. No one's ever done that, meaning righted the ship that quickly. But I'm with you, Jeff. I thought they were going to take a step backwards. I still picked them to win the division, but I thought without the shortstop, without the closer, without a few other things, that they were going to take a step back, and maybe they still will. But as long as they got the Mets at the corners, Matt Olson is a really good player. Matt Chapman is an exceptional player, and they find enough ways to score runs. They've rebuilt that bullpen. Their starting rotation, when it's right, should be very good. So we shouldn't be at all surprised they are where they are, but man, it's been a weird way getting there, 0-6 and then 11 in a row.
Okay, Tim, you mentioned they were 0-6, and I didn't really even realize that. And then you look on the other side, and the New York Yankees are 6-11, and everybody's pulling their hair out thinking the world's going to come to an end. What do you think's wrong with the Yankees, and what do you think it's going to take to turn it around for them?
Well, I did their game last night, and I've done three of their games this year. They can't hit, fellas. This is one of the great head scratchers. They are last in the league in slugging percentage. Their offense hasn't been this bad through 17 games of any season since 1968, when the team was not very good, and that was the year of the pitcher. This team is supposed to be a devastating offensive team, and yet they've scored one run in the first inning all year. They've scored one run last night in the ninth inning all year, and they haven't scored a whole lot of runs in between. And the bottom line is they are a very pitchable team when they're not swinging very well. You can get Aaron Judge out when he's not swinging well. You can get Giancarlo Stanton out pretty easily when he's not swinging well, and nobody's swinging very well. Gleyber Torres has one RBI, and he's hitting under 200. He hit 38 homers 2 years ago, but it's the entire team. And I'm not going to panic in any case after 17 games, but boy, we did their game last night, and they did not look like a good baseball team at all.
Yeah, you're hearing Aaron Boone, have team meetings and maybe yelling or throwing things. Do you think that works with a veteran team?
Well, I don't think it works when Aaron Boone does it, because even though Aaron Boone is a dear friend of mine, and I can't look at him any other way, he was my teammate for 6 years, it's just not his nature to do that, although I've seen him get angry before, trust me. But it just doesn't work, I don't think, in today's day and age when you tip over the spread. I mean, maybe when Buck Rogers did it or somebody else did it during Jeff's day, those things worked. I'm sure they did when Doug Rader did it when I covered the Rangers. But I don't think it works with today's players, and I think with the way we evaluate players, the way we treat them, the value of our managers, I just don't think it works. So you got to yell at them once in a while to say, look, this is unacceptable. But if those players don't know that this is unacceptable at this point, slugging like 330 as a team. Well, that they're not understanding anything.
Tim, you mentioned Gleyber Torres, and a couple of years ago in spring training, I was part of kind of a groupish scrum with Brian Cashman. Gleyber Torres walked by, said hello to some people and all that. And Cashman went off just in glowing terms about Gleyber Torres and, you know, how he could be part of the next great Yankees foundation, et cetera, et cetera. What's happened with Gleyber Torres? Because we saw him not run out of ball last night. That happens. Guys get tired. Guys get frustrated. But there's just not a good look about him right now.
Yeah, and Jeff, he's not a shortstop, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And I thought he could play shortstop, and I was told all along he'll be better at second, but he can play shortstop. And Aaron Boone told me time and time again as a second baseman, this guy is always in the right spot at the right time, always as a second baseman. And that's simply not the case at shortstop right now. And I think long-term they're going to have to look at moving him back to second or moving him period and going maybe getting one of those free agent shortstops after the season. But it's the offense that I can't figure out. Again, 38 homers 2 years ago, three last year during a shortened season, of course, and none this year. And he hasn't hit the fastball. And a lot of guys don't hit the fastball very well anymore. He used to tattoo it, and now he's getting beaten on the heater, and that's not a good sign. But, again, he's 24 years old. Right. I expect him to pull out of this, but it's been longer than I thought.
Yeah, you mentioned offenses league-wise. I'm sure you know this. Runs per game are down. Hits per game are down. Home runs per game are down. Strikeouts are up. Batting average in baseball is like around .233. Do you think there's anything Major League Baseball can do to quite frankly, help out the hitter?
I don't think there's anything we can do right now. And I'm sorry, moving the pitcher's rubber back a foot isn't going to help anything or anybody. It's just going to get more people hurt, and that's mm-hmm. not the way to go. Look, the pitchers are so good right now. I mean, I saw that Julian Merriweather guy on opening day, and that was ridiculous what he was throwing up there, and no one has any idea who he is. Yeah. But he's like so many other really good relief pitchers and so many other starters. Their stuff is so violent. It's so good. And they don't just throw 98. They have great secondary stuff. And it comes down to this, fellas, and it's true. Unless our really good pitchers make a mistake, our hitters have no chance against them. No chance. We had five teams go to the playoffs last year with a team batting average under .230, and they made the playoffs. We're going to have the lowest batting average this year since 1968, the year of the pitcher. And until our hitters make the adjustment and say, I can't hit this guy, he's better than I am right now, and try something else, we're going to see the strikeouts go up and we're going to see everything else go down, because that's where we're headed.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the other aspect of this equation, and it's way, I don't know if anybody has the answer for it as well, but I almost think there has to be some sort of economic incentive. And, you know, home runs are the currency of the realm right now. And as long as that's the case, and I don't know if it's a chicken and egg thing, I don't know what has to come first for it to happen, but I think that's also part of the issue. And I don't know, maybe the CBA can address it somehow, but guys are only going to do what they're going to be paid to do, right?
Absolutely. I don't blame the players for being in the spot that they're in. The teams, the game has told them, this is how we play now. You get the ball up in the air, and you try to hit the ball out of the ballpark. That's where the damage comes. And, of course, there's some truth to that. But in the meantime, these averages have gone down so much. Jeff, last year the Reds, who made the playoffs, had more walks than singles last year for a season. Again, shortened season, but that's never happened, never come close to happening in a major league season. And until we get back to valuing the base hit again, that a hard single, you know, between first and second base is a good thing, that's not what we're looking for. And you're right, if we make it a money thing and you get paid to do that, maybe we'll start to see a change. But why would a player change the approach that he's had since he was 10 years old and he's getting paid to do it? Why would he change unless while the game is telling him, no, we want you to do this?
it is obviously still a little early, and people do tend to overreact, but we've seen, we've read, we've heard a lot of people talking about the Washington Nationals, and of course we know that Max Scherzer is a free agent. Dan in Ancaster, a listener and a reader and a watcher of ESPN, I might add, wants us to ask you, what do you think it would take to get Mac? Well, he's saying to get Max Scherzer and Yan Gomes from the Nationals right now, and he's talking about the Jays. But his point, his broader point, is that, you know, he thinks the Nats are going nowhere, and they may be looking to unload these guys. Are there teams right now, maybe the Nationals are one of them, Tim, that you're looking at and thinking, okay, they may be making moves as we get closer to the trade deadline?
I think it's too early for most teams, and I definitely think it's too early for the Nationals. Now, I don't anticipate them doing what they did 2 years ago, but they were 18-31 and ended up winning the World Series. Now, they don't have the same team as 2 years ago, but I don't see them giving up Max Scherzer at this point because, A, he's great again, and they need to bring people into the ballpark. He's the heart and soul of the team in a lot of ways, and he makes an enormous amount of money. So anyone right. that's going to come over and say, give us Max Scherzer, the Nationals are first going to say no, and then they're going to say, all right, if you want him, here's what we need from you. But I just don't see that happening until much later in the summer. And if the Nationals are hopelessly out of it, maybe they do the Aroldis Chapman thing, trade him and get something good for him, Gleyber Torres, like the Yankees did, like the Cubs did, Yankees did, and then get him back in the offseason because they want him there long term. That's how popular he is in D.C. But, man, imagine adding Max Scherzer to your rotation at the end of July and having him in October. That's a difference maker.
Yeah, it'd be like Verlander, except he wouldn't have the term in the contract, right?
Right, but he's still making an enormous amount of money this year, but there he's a free agent after the year, so there's nothing after this year. So yes, it would make all the sense of the world for teams to do that. I just don't think it makes sense right now for the Nationals to look into that.
Tim, before we let you go, in your mind, who's the second best team in baseball?
Boy, I had to figure that out the other day, and that's a really hard question. I picked the Red Sox the other day as the second best team in baseball because I'm so confused. They had the second best record, so I took them. They have a really good offensive team, but I would say the Padres are the second best team in the National League, but they have all these injuries now. Tatis Jr. hasn't looked the same. The A's are really good with 11 in a row, but I'm just not sure. It's a great question. I'm just not sure there's a second best team in baseball right now when the Dodgers are that good. The gap between 1 and 2 might be as large as I've seen it in a long time. And I'm not sure that's great for baseball, but that's the way I see it from here because the Dodgers are that good and that deep.
Tim, thanks so much for doing this, man. Terrific insight as always. Great to hear your voice again. Stay safe and be well.
Thank you so much.
Okay, guys. See you.
Take care. That's Tim Kirkjian of ESPN. And for what it's worth, I think he's right. I have a hard time figuring out who the second best team in baseball is right now. It changes every day.
Yeah.
But I know who the first best. I swear to God, I think they're going to break the all-time wins record this year.
Yeah, well, it doesn't really matter what they do for me in the regular season. Their season starts in October, obviously. Yeah. But they are so much better, even without guys like Bellinger and Betts. When Betts has a little hiccup, you know, physically and can miss a couple of games, they don't miss a beat. Bellinger's going to be out for a little while. Don't miss a beat.
You made the point, and it is a great point, that the one thing that might interfere with that is if they have a huge lead, then maybe you start resting guys in September to get ready for the playoffs. But the way I look at it, and this is just what you said, they can rest guys and still be they can rest three players and still be the best team on the field against almost any team in baseball.
Their second team is better than most first teams. It really is. That's why they always say the rivalry between them and the Padres. I just don't see how that's possible when you never see the Padres really winning any big games. And
I think, though, that is – I think there's still a rivalry between them and the Giants. That rivalry is based on a deep, deep history that goes back to you know, Juan Marichal and John Roseboro and all those things. And, of course, the two teams being in New York, the same – all that stuff. that is a historical rival. San Diego wants to have a rivalry with Los Angeles. I think Los Angeles is so much better than any other team in baseball right now that I'm not certain they view anybody as a rival. You know, I really don't. Maybe still the Houston Astros because of all the garbage can banging and all that.
Now I will say with the moves that the Dodgers did in the offseason, that starting pitcher they got and paid a bunch of money for, I think the front office may think that that's more of a rivalry than the players do.
Well, that's fair. Yeah, that's
when one of your team fair. when the same team in your division goes out and spends as much money as they did on a shortstop.
That's fair.
You know, you gotta bring it.
We got to talk about Ryan Borucki and Trent Thornton. I'm in a very positive frame of mind today.
It's about time. I like this guy.
Well, I'm in a positive frame of mind today. I really like that. I just really like what I'm seeing out of Ryan Borucki. I think Ryan Borucki, as I said, is going to emerge as, I'm going to say, I think he might be the most important arm in that bullpen by the end of the year. If this team is playing meaningful baseball, contending, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera.
I think David Phelps is going to be a big deal, too.
All right, we'll take a deeper look at the bullpen because the bullpen was lights out last night for the most part. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, so we are going to talk about the Blue Jays bullpen, but Barker and I were throwing some stuff around during the break. Just had Tim Kirkjian on talking about just how good pitching is right now, and I don't know how you change it. I really don't. I just
limited shift.
But so we anyhow, the conversation got around to Corbin Burnes of the Milwaukee Brewers, who has struck out 40 and walked none. Just think about that.
0.37 ERA. Okay,
I understand that pitchers are supposed to be ahead of hitters. I get all that. He's walked 40, or he struck out 40 and walked none. Barker, you made an interesting point about Corbin Burnes I hadn't thought of. But he's basically doing all this without throwing the four-seamer that everybody says you need to throw now in baseball, right? Because everybody wants to
locate it better.
Everybody wants to throw up, launch angle, et cetera. He didn't even throw it.
No, he throws cutter, sinker, changeup, slider, curveball. Now, you start to think about that, and it's anywhere from 97 to 81 miles an hour.
Right.
To ask a hitter to actually go to the plate and try and cover all of that strike zone.
Because he's got two real good pitches for every side of the plate, and then the one he can use in both.
That's exactly right. He's got a cutter for the lefty. He's got a sinker for the righty and the lefty. He's got a changeup for both sides of the plate because they're throwing it to righties now. He's got a slider for the right-handed hitter. You know, you want to get him looking in and throw the slider that spins down and away. He's got the curveball for a left-hander. You have so many, and it's anywhere from 97 to 81 miles an hour. To think that you're a hitter and you got about that much time to get your foot down in an athletic position and everything between your ears is thinking, okay, I gotta look for that. I got to look for this pitch. I got to look for this pitch in this certain area. It's 97 miles an hour. I don't want to hit his slider or his curveball or his changeup because nobody else can. So why am I going to think I can hit it? So I'm going to try and hope that he doesn't throw a cutter that cuts a lot or he doesn't throw a sinker that goes down. It's more of a running sinker. You got to hope those two things happen. To actually think that consistently a hitter can go, even the great hitters, can go up and zone up that much on that much power and that much difference in mile per hour between the sinker and the cutter and the three secondary pitches is just to say that with spin rates and with the stick 'em on the ball and the shift, to say that the pitchers are so much further ahead than the hitters is the biggest understatement of the year. I don't know how a hitter can figure out how to hit all this stuff or better yet, lay off of most of these things. Because what he does is, because he throws so hard, it's hard to tell the difference between the five of them. That's why he's so good.
Do you think a more standardized electronic strike zone would help the hitter?
I think not giving...
Is that ultimately where we are going, where the thing that will make the change in offense?
Maybe have umpires not call the high strike. That might be one. Yeah, you can't level out your swing and get on top of 98, 99, 97 consistently. You just can't do it. Because what they do is they get you looking down with the slider, the curveball, and the change and the sinker. Your eyes are set down here, and then they elevate something that has a little bit of run or a little bit of sink to it that's elevated, and it's elevated at 97. You just it's too much to ask. That's why you say when you watch the Blue Jays play and you watch how young they are and then you watch who they're facing and how elite the stuff is that's coming out of their hand and how much they throw secondary pitches and the difference between how hard their fastball is and how slow their breaking ball is just, thank goodness I'm not playing now. Because I would it's just not good enough now to widen out, shorten up, choke up on the bat, and think that you can consistently barrel up baseballs. It's a lot to ask.
All right, let's return focus. The Jays have tonight off. They will start a three-game series against the Tampa Bay Rays Friday. We may see George Springer in that game. We know that the Jays are going to see Tyler Glasnow. They're going to see Brent Honeywell as well. We're going to get somebody on from the Rays tomorrow to talk about that because I'm intrigued by the fact this kid throws a screwball. Nobody throws a screwball anymore. They just don't. But before we'll have plenty of time to talk about that. I want to talk about Trent Thornton and Ryan Brucki very quickly. What is Trent Thornton going to be? Is he a starting pitcher? Do you think, is he part of this rotation, fifth starter guy, maybe down the road, or?
That's a great question. Look, you know, what are you asking from your fifth guy? Four innings, you know, maybe a time and a half through or nine plus the first two guys, because when you start getting into 3, 4, 5, that's your RBI guys, guys that can get the ball in the air. Consistently, if you see Trent Thornton, is the curveball good enough? Because he's eliminated the sinker and the slider. So is his cutter good enough? Is his curveball good enough? You know, he's trying not to be predictable. That's why you saw last night he's flipping the curveball 0-0 in fastball counts. He'd throw a changeup when he would be 0-0, he'd throw some cutters with runners on base. It's the things of, okay, I'm not so much trying to overpower you or use six different pitches. I'm trying to trick you a little bit. Is he good enough to give you two times through an order? That's a big question. Mechanically sound enough to repeat delivery over and over and over again because all the things that are going on. I think short burst, you're getting him 7 or 8 batters. Yeah, he can do all the things I just mentioned and be successful.
Ryan Brucki.
I love his stuff. I love how he's made an adjustment. I love his routine between times he pitches.
Last night.
It'd be interesting to see how he handles the two innings because the last time he threw more than an inning was last year in August.
Right.
Sorry.
And he threw two last night.
Yeah, he threw an inning and third, I think, in August of 2020. No, he threw two innings last night, an inning and third, 2020. So his body's not used to doing that routine-wise. He's not used to doing that. You know, they're keeping him from doing that because of health reasons. And they want maximum stuff. And it just shows analytically that he can max out everything. Mindset. You know, the
could
adrenaline, all of that stuff. Look, if it's the right part of the order, do I want him facing J.D. Martinez a lot? You know, the Xander Bogaerts, those are tall orders. He has made adjustments. He knows how to crowd right-handed hitters. He can do it with the extra couple of velocity miles an hour on that thing. And the slider's a good pitch. I like his stuff. You just got to be careful because you don't want him to lose confidence. You put him in the wrong spots. He gets beat up a couple of times. How's he going to handle that? So, be careful with him and maximize his stuff by a short burst. You got 5, 4, or 5 guys. Come out there and just let that thing eat. I give you a day off, and you come back and do it 2 days later. That kind of stuff. But he's got good stuff. He's made good adjustments. And for me, it's a lot about his routine. He used to be a max effort guy, right? He'd be throwing line to line, right? The only way I'm going to keep my arm strength is if I'm getting out there long tossing, you know, 7,000 feet. Now I'm going to be nice and easy. I'm just trying to stay loose. Not going to do anything other than that.
When he was younger and in the Blue Jays system, he was one guy, he was always trying to add extra velocity.
Yeah.
Always. And which is...
TJ Zoic.
It's understandable, but at some point you just go, there's a difference between stuff and velocity. You know, you reach a certain point where it's not going to go any harder.
95 located from a left-handed pitcher is pretty good stuff.
Sure. And he is... He's a guy that's just
David Phelps, I think, is going to be really good.
Arm.
He's a very smart guy. We saw him Bogaerts, bases loaded. You know, Petey goes out there and says, hey, he likes to ambush the first pitch, runners in scoring position. That's usually the best one to throw. throws something with a little movement to it. You know, he takes a little bit off. It's 90-mile-an-hour cutter. Get a guy out in front a little bit, jams himself, gets a big out. I think he's going to be big, too.
Last night was maybe the first time this year that I kind of I could see the Jays, the idea of different arm angles, different stuff, different guys, different pace working. You know, like we talked about copying the Rays, and I kind of got that last night, right? Like the difference between Dolis and Brucky is, you know. You kind of saw that whole mix and match thing.
And the strike, weak contact is at the forefront. It's not so much all the time about striking people out, which is give up a homer, give up a solo shot.
We got the Rays, 3 games against the Rays tomorrow. You know what that means. Oh, it'll be Rays Fest all day long tomorrow on Baseball Central.